Good morning. It's 10 after 5. It's Tuesday, the 25th day of February. How you doing? Yesterday, I went home and I turned on NBA TV and I watched that Kobe Memorial Live, all 2 hours, and I have not been quite right since. Let me tell you something. I was like, all day yesterday, I was feeling it. It was unbelievable. And I know there have been snippets played on the news, but if you had a chance to see that whole thing, and I don't know whether, I don't think NBA TV replayed it, and I don't know, I guess maybe online you can see the whole thing, but it will impact you like you cannot believe if you watch that whole thing. Even some of the speeches that you see, I know it's very emotional and it gets to you, but I think it was, it may have been a mistake for me to watch that whole thing, because I'm still not quite right today. It was unbelievable. It was amazing. And we'll play a couple of excerpts from a couple of the more emotional speeches in our top six at six that we do around 6:18. And then we're going to make room to play that entire Michael Jordan speech, because I think it's worth it. And we'll do that at 7:18 this morning. Unbelievable. You see much of that, Dave?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, you and I were talking yesterday morning, would Michael be there? And not only was he there, he probably was I guess if you can have a highlight in a memorial service, he provided it.
Yeah, the emotional highlight.
He was powerful and well, you know, he just, what he had to say, it was heartfelt, it was genuine, it was tearful, it was, brought out all the emotions that I think everybody was feeling.
And he barely went to the notes. If you saw it, he looked at his notes a couple of times, but most of it was off the top of his head. Very impressive. Yeah, I heard one of the NBA commentators who is a lot more familiar with Michael Jordan's public speeches than I am over the years say that they had never seen him like that, talking in a setting like in a public setting like that. I mean, it was quite something. It's 5:12 right now. We will get a prize to our first caller of the day, as usual. That's coming up momentarily. Our number here, 312-981-7200. And that's the text number as well, 312-981-7200. Email, bobshow@wgnradio.com. And as Steve Grzanich mentioned, updated forecast does not have much snow in it. But we are expecting winds of 20 to 30 miles an hour out of the northeast, and that means the lakeshore is going to be interesting. WGN-TV's Eric Rung is on that story this morning. Hi, Eric. How you doing?
Good morning. Yeah, we are at Howard Beach right now, and the waves are already kicking up pretty good off of Lake Michigan here. Yeah, we're expecting 8 to 12-foot waves. There is a flood warning for the lakeshore, which we have been seeing quite a bit of here lately. It begins here in about a half hour, and it'll last through tomorrow afternoon. Once again, expecting 8 to 12-foot high waves. Not as high as some of the ones that we have seen not that long ago. Last month, we saw 55-mile-per-hour winds and 25-foot waves. That did a lot of damage. That storm in mid-January caused about $38 million worth of damage along the lakefront trails and beaches, and which have been battling erosion here now for years along Lake Michigan. Three beaches up here in Rogers Park have already closed due to erosion, and there are plans in place to do some more proactive measures here, but so far they are really behind in trying to save a lot of the lakeshore here.
This keeps up. We're not going to have any beaches left by summer.
Yeah, and it's not just here along Chicago's lakefront, too. This is happening all around Lake Michigan, you know, in Indiana as well as Michigan. There are just beaches that are just gone now that people have been able to enjoy for decades. And, you know, part of the issue is that Lake Michigan right now is at its highest levels that we've seen water-wise in 30 years. The Army Corps of Engineers, right now, they don't see it going down anytime soon. Dick Durbin was just in town not too long ago. He said, if you don't believe in climate change, Lake Michigan has a message for you, and it's time to wake up. And the city council recently just passed some emergency measures to try and really make climate change here a big issue, try and get some federal dollars flowing into the city of Chicago to protect the lakeshore, which is, of course, just a jewel of the city.
I was just looking at Tom Skilling's weather write-up in the Tribune. The winds are not really supposed to diminish until Thursday night. So this is going to be going on for a while.
Oh, yeah. And as you know, I mean, the lakeshore has just been beaten down this year and at the end of last year, too. And I'm just looking at the waves now here at Howard Beach. And we got here about a half hour ago. And I can already tell that there's a sizable difference because they're starting to splash up now on some of the roadways already. And when we got here a half hour ago, we didn't see any water coming up here now. So it's going to be a rough and tumble couple of good hours here along the lakeshore. A couple of tumble days, actually.
Surf's up. Eric Rung will be getting his surfboard out, and that'll be fun to watch on Channel 9.
All right. Have a good morning. No promises
report.
On that.
All right, Eric. We'll talk to you. It is 5:23 right now, and let's say hello to Ivan calling in from Burbank, and you were the first listener call today. That means you get a prize. Congrats. And hi, Ivan. Good morning. What's up?
Hey, good morning.
Where are you off to today?
I'm off to where you're at, work.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do for a living, Ivan?
I drive a forklift for a company called Vanny Foods.
And what kind of foods do they sell?
Well, if you ever eat at Dairy Queen, if you ever get the chili dog, well, we specialize in their chili.
Well, I have to admit that I'm a big Dairy Queen guy, but I usually don't go there for a meal. It's usually dessert.
Exactly, yeah. The ice cream there, the best.
There have been times, I love this off-serve. There have been times, Ivan, that I have wanted to drive a forklift on the expressway and use it to just pick cars up and get them out of my way. Or if I see somebody driving crazy, you know, my fantasy is to lift them up and put them off to the shoulder.
Well, my fantasy is to drive a tank with loaded and just kind of blast these people out of the way. But yeah, been doing this for about 12 years.
All right. Well, be careful.
Really enjoy my job. Enjoy the people that I work with. So
good for you.
It's not about the job. It's about the people that you work with a lot of the times.
Yeah, that's great. It's great that you can look forward to going to work and keep those fantasies as fantasies. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir. No kapoom here.
Well, since the weather forecasts changed so much, I think you're going to want to do your own weather forecasting pretty soon. So we'll send you a desktop indoor weather station. Brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Man. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. We'll get that out to you, Ivan. Hold on. We'll get all the information we need. And thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Excellent. You guys are doing a great job. Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. Hold on now. It's 5:25 right now. And I was just reading this dog story here about fitness trackers. Do you have a fitness tracker on your dog? Apparently, 56% of dogs in the U.S. are overweight or obese. And now they have these fitness trackers for dogs. Relatively new to the market, often paired with a GPS tracker. They monitor the dog's activity or lack of it. Depending on the model, they can track when a dog plays, sleeps, runs, and walks over the course of a day. And it can usually locate your dog if necessary. But the experts say, be careful when you're trying to get your dog in shape. Just like people, you don't want to do too much too soon. You take an out-of-shape dog on a run, and that can result in various injuries and other problems. And they mention a couple of the fitness trackers out there. FitBark monitors distance traveled, calories burned, overall health, and sleep quality. I wonder how it does that. Then there's a fit tracker for a dog called Whistle Go Explore Health and Location Tracker gives you a chronological breakdown of activity and sleep. It tracks calories burned, distance traveled, and how many minutes the dog is active. It reportedly tracks and analyzes behavior relevant to health, such as licking, scratching, and sleeping.
See, I bet it gives the dog anxiety. Just like Fitbits give us anxiety, the dog's like, oh no, I need two more steps. Oh no.
Yeah, you'll know exactly how much time your dog spends drinking out of the toilet, apparently. Let's see. This one provides notifications also for vet appointments, medication, grooming, and other pet-related activities. Okay? And then there's one called the Pet Pace that monitors factors that affect health, like body temperature, respiration, pulse, activity levels, body positioning, calories, and changes in heart rate that can indicate pain or anxiety. That company says its health monitoring service analyzes the data and alerts both you and your vet if it detects some kind of problem. The veterinarians in this story say, be careful, though technology has its limits. When it comes to fitness trackers for dogs, some are more accurate than others. Some will count scratching or other activity as steps, which can be misleading. So they say, before investing, do your research, look at reviews, and if possible, talk to people who own dogs who use a particular brand. If your dog has a specific issue, like arthritis or skin allergies, look for a fitness tracker that will detect changes in body movement or excessive scratching. Yeah, I know a few people that maybe could use one of these dog fit bits. Okay. You spend more money on your dog. Can you imagine trying to put one of these on a cat? You know?
Oh, they wouldn't have anything to do with it. Sarah, are you kidding me?
I can see the cat, like, you know, shaking its paw, going crazy. Anyway, it's a big story here about the headline, what you need to know before you splurge on a dog fitness tracker. I guess people are actually doing that. It's coming up on 5:29. And later on this morning, we'll talk to our pal, the sleep expert, Dr. Hal Stewart. We'll do that between 6:30 and 7 this morning, because there was another story we talked about recently about smell. Remember that? And how the scent of your romantic partner can improve your sleep. So we'll get the science behind that. Right.
What about
here.
The scent of your dog?
Yeah, you know what? That helps too. We'll ask him about that. This is your radio station for dog Fitbits and smelling your partner's old T-shirt stories. We do that on the nines. Agribusiness Brief Time with Orion.
Good morning. About the only word I have to say to talk markets this morning is coronavirus. Grain and soy futures tumbled yesterday as fears over the rapid spread of the outbreak beyond China dragged down stock markets around the world and also made the dollar stronger. Technical selling further fueled the drop. Corn and soybeans down nearly 2%, wheat down more than 3%. Corn futures hit life of contract lows in nearly all months, while most 2021 soybean contracts also hit new lows. So, at the end of the trading day in the grain market yesterday, we saw the March soybean contract down 13 cents a bushel, the March corn contract down 4.25 cents a bushel, and the March soybean contract down 15 cents a bushel. Livestock, no difference there. Lean cattle, feeder cattle, hog futures all dropped again. Coronavirus the reason. And the actively traded April live cattle contract and nearly all feeder cattle contracts closed down by their daily trading limits, triggering expanded limits today. Lean hog futures ended with their steepest losses for the month in an actively traded session. session. Nearby contracts posting limit losses early in the session. So at the end of the trading day, at the Merck yesterday, the June live hog contract down $1.92. The live cattle contract for April down the $3 limit. And the feeder cattle contract for April down $4.25. Could be another interesting day today. That's Ag Biz. Have a great day.
We will try. Our thanks to Orion. Financial expert Terry Savage will join us later on this morning between 8:30 and 9. We'll talk about what's next for the markets. Well, it's official. Punchkies are here. It's Fat Tuesday, isn't it? And, of course, every radio station has these. I'm trying to use all the willpower I have not to have any of that. But did you guys have a taste yet?
Nope.
They're around. Be careful. Fat Tuesday is the English translation of the French term Mardi Gras, because members of the Christian faith would stuff themselves with beef, bread, and anything else that was left in their homes on the last day before Ash Wednesday, which kicked off the 40 days of Lent, leading to Easter Sunday. I'm thinking of giving up exercising for Lent this year. I want to do something that I can stick with. It's 5:41. I know we're talking about baseball and hockey and basketball, but at the NFL Scouting Combine today, we're going to hear from the Bears management, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
I wonder what they're going to have to say.
Yeah, Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy are going to meet the media later on this morning. And we'll find out, get some thoughts on what they're thinking as free agency is right around the corner and how big a year this is coming up for Mitch Trubisky and what else they're going to do maybe at the quarterback position. They've let some guys go lately, Prince Amukamara and Taylor Gabriel, so they have some holes to fill there as they look towards the free agent market. And so we'll get an early take from them, and Adam Hogue is there. He's going to be covering it all for us.
Dave, are you happy with the Blackhawks moves?
I think it's kind of is what it is. You know, I think that it would be in a perfect world, they would be in contention now. They wouldn't have been selling. They would have been buying at this point. But I get it. They're trying to take some veterans that they deemed expendable, or perhaps in Robin Leonard's case, a guy who is headed to the free agent market and is going to be, they tried to sign him and things weren't working out from that standpoint. But, so they got some draft picks, got a couple young players, a defenseman who's a prospect, and then a backup goaltender for now. And, you know, I guess we'll see. But, I mean, it's just too bad because they had a great 1-2 punch with Leonard and Crawford. Really a luxury not too many teams have to have two goaltenders playing like that. So
I heard a couple of analysts say that the Hawks should have got more in return.
Why? And I think that's why you saw this come down to, an hour or so before the trade deadline is when they finally made the deals, because obviously they weren't getting the maybe the interest that they thought there was going to be, or they weren't getting their price met, so they figure you got to get something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, we'll see what Jeremy Collin has to say about it when we talk to him at about 7:40 this morning. Mary, what time does road rage usually begin?
On which road?
There's a new survey. And road rage is surprisingly more common than you think. Listen to this. 39% of men and 29% of women admit to having been the subject of road rage exhibited against them. Some of the survey's findings, 38% of Americans admit to making rude gestures at other drivers while driving. Do people still do that? I haven't seen the finger in a long time. Is there some new thing people do now instead of that? Is that not in anymore?
I think people still do it.
Do they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they got to realize it. It's quite dangerous to do that, though.
No kidding.
You don't know if people have any kind of weapons in their car. It just makes me nervous.
And my new thing is I try to sort of rise above it all and think, I feel sorry for this person. You know, I don't feel the need to retaliate anymore, as maybe I once did. I'm older and more mature now, you know. 1 in 5 Americans realize that road rage is a criminal offense. Only 1 in 5 realize that. Road rage has led to an estimated 300 deaths since 2013. Men are more likely to experience road rage, specifically men under the age of 19. So, yeah, those drivers tend to be a little crazier, I guess.
I thought it'd be like more people in their 20s. You know,
More likely to experience it.
Yeah, well, or delve it out.
Yeah. Females between the ages of 18 and 34 experience feelings of road rage more than 4 times per week. Females between 18 and 34 experience road rage more than 4 times a week. Now, why would that be?
So other people yelling at them?
I guess. Yeah. Or maybe they're just more honest when they take these surveys. This study was composed based on findings by Google Analytics and was conducted last November. So, I mean, you know, the one thing good about, I think, about, you know, the rush hour is, you know, you can't move anywhere. It's just like a parking lot anyway.
Yeah, the rage just builds up.
Well, no, I mean, you can't. There's no room to drive like a nut. Boy, I tell you, this morning, like, you know, when we come in, when all of us come in, it's pretty empty out there. And there was a guy who passed me on the left today. He must have been going 100 miles an hour on the Kennedy.
And you don't even see him. You're just like sitting there. Because I don't know about you, but I'm in automation when I drive in the morning.
I know. I'm afraid of that, by the way.
I'm just like, da-da-da-da-da. Then whoosh, you know, somebody comes flying by
you. Yeah, that's what scares me driving in so early is, yeah, automation. That's a good way to put it. I remember, you know, a couple weeks ago I was asking if anybody ever drove through the barrier when the express lanes are closed. Because I could see myself doing that because I'm... In that automated state.
I didn't say a trance, Bob. You know, I don't want you to be hypnotic as you're driving in.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying not to be, but, you know, at that hour of the morning.
Automatically aware you have to be.
Yeah. I do notice, though, how many people are on the road at, like, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Well, whenever you tell people that you work this early in the morning, do they all say, well, at least there's no traffic?
Yeah, I know.
That is the first thing people say to me, and I go, are you kidding me? There are semis, there are people, you know, that have been drinking and stuff like that, and you got to be really careful.
That's true.
Because there's crazy people out at this hour of the morning.
Right. Don't be in a trance.
No.
Don't drive in an automated state.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
Be aware always.
Anyway, so the bottom line in this survey, road rage may be more common than you think. In my unscientific survey, I have noticed that, you know, it used to be if there was a crazy driver right on your tail or somebody weaving around and then you came up alongside of them to give the driver at least a stare, if nothing else, the driver was always a male. Not anymore. Mary, you've caught up with us. It's somebody who's you know, female doing this. So
can I bring up a related subject?
Yes, Dave.
Whatever happened to waving when somebody lets you in, or if you let a driver change lanes in front of you, mm-hmm. or pull out of a driveway where mm-hmm. you didn't have to stop, but you do. You're trying to be courteous. Nobody waves anymore.
I'm so glad you brought that up. The last 2 or 3 times I have been courteous and tried to do that and not been rushing around, I have not received the nod or the little salute back. I have not, and I will always do that.
See, yeah. I think that's a big cause of road rage, when people aren't courteous.
You know what? Here's what I'm going to do. The next time I let somebody in front of me or do something courteous like that, and I don't get the wave back, I'm going to give that driver the finger.
There you go. That's the way to bring peace to the world.
It's time for tinted windows.
Yeah, that bothers me too.
I know. Isn't that crazy? I hate that. It's like, who's in there?
4 minutes before six. You know they're tinted because there's something bad going on in there, or that driver will commit some offense. Steve's got our market outlook for this morning.
Well, we'll be watching, obviously, the numbers on Wall Street after yesterday's big loss. We saw that nearly 1,000-point loss yesterday on the Dow. Markets are trying to gain a little bit of that back today, but so far not having a lot of luck. Home prices will be in the spotlight. The Case-Shiller Home Price Index for December comes out at just about 6 o'clock this morning, so just a few more minutes. Analysts are expecting to see 2.7% increase. Also this morning at 6, December's U.S. House Price Index is out. The experts are forecasting a 0.3% increase. We'll also get some earnings today. Home Depot already out. They had a good quarter. Macy's is coming. Caesars Entertainment, Salesforce, Virgin Galactic, and VW all reporting quarterly earnings today. So a few things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, February the 25th.
Good morning. It's 10 after 6. Want to get your kids to eat healthier? You may pick up a tip from former White House physician Dr. Ronnie Jackson. He has described to the New York Times his plot to introduce more vegetables into President Trump's diet. Jackson has been determined to cut the president's weight by 10 to 15 pounds, possibly by introducing an exercise bike. But he said, "The exercise stuff never took off as much as I wanted it to, but we were working on his diet. We were making the ice cream less accessible, and here's a tip for you. We were putting cauliflower into his mashed potatoes." See, you got to sneak that stuff in. Jackson, of course, was the physician who made that glowing endorsement of the president's physical condition while he was the White House physician. He claimed the president could live 200 years with dietary improvements. President Trump liked that. And let's see, what else did the doctor tell the New York Times about how he was trying to get the president healthier? Donald Trump, of course, famously fueled his presidential campaign with Diet Coke and McDonald's and served a Big Mac buffet on silver platters when Clemson's football team visited the White House last year. Some foreign leaders have catered to Mr. Trump's indifference to hot cuisine, and on the president's first official visit to Japan a few years ago, the country's prime minister did not serve the traditional delicacies. He served the president a beef burger after they discussed affairs of state. The physician had placed the president on a crash diet, swapping junk food for salads after Dr. Jackson performed a physical on him a couple of years ago, found him to be a pound short of clinical obesity. But the president apparently has gained weight in last year's physical. It's up to 243 right now. And he will be eating healthy this week, though. Is he still in India?
He's there right now, wrapping up his trip.
He'll be living on a vegetarian diet. He'll be served vegetarian meals during that entire trip. So he may be craving some meat when he gets back, steak or fast food.
I heard somebody yesterday talking about how they were urging him not to ask for beef while he was in India because of the cow being sacred.
Right.
And the person said, well, all he eats at the White House are steaks, meatloaf, and hamburgers. And to not ask for any of those three while he's in India.
No impossible burgers for the president?
Don't you think you kind of notice the cauliflower and the mashed potatoes? Isn't it a little crunchy, you know?
You know what? I would notice the taste. I don't know if the texture would get to me. Because I get a lot of cauliflower at home because Marianne's on that keto diet.
Oh, yeah.
So everything's cauliflower. And I'm sick of the cauliflower rice. I will tell you that right now.
Yeah, that's a big thing right now.
But it's healthy.
Oh, I had it last night. I love it.
It's delicious. Here we go.
I love it, too. Yeah.
They even have the cauliflower keto-friendly pizza now. It's like a cauliflower crust.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Yep. Uh-huh. Haven't had that
yet. And they have a cauliflower pasta that I've had as well that's really good.
Note to self, buy stock in cauliflower companies. 614.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the top six at six with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
At 6:19, the first story of the day, the weather, or the lack of it anyway, WGN meteorologist Mike Hammernick has details on what we are going to get today. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Bob. Good morning. Yeah, we've got a pretty quiet start to the day. Not much going on right now. The radar is pretty quiet, although the storm is still producing some rain and snow south downstate. It looks like some of that's going to arrive later on this afternoon in the form of a rain-snow mix. That will change over to snow tonight, and that's when things may get a little bit dicey as far as travel is concerned tonight into tomorrow morning especially. But we're fine for today. Temperatures will be above freezing all day long until after 9 or 10 o'clock, and that's when we'll drop to or below the freezing mark, and that's when some of the snow may begin to stick. Most of the snow over the south suburbs, it looks like into northwest Indiana, north of the city, may not see much in the way of snow as this storm is traveling about 200 miles further south than it looked like 36 hours ago, and that's really going to limit its impact on us here in Chicago.
Okay. And you're sure about this now, right?
The only thing I'm worried about is if we're going to see anything at all. I'm more worried about that than getting too much out of this storm system. The jet stream's never phased in the horse is out of the barn already. It's not going to happen. These storms are not going to phase with these two pieces of energy. So we're not going to see the big storm. That's pretty much a given. It's just how much further south this storm will pass. But we'll see some flakes fly, but it doesn't look like a major one for us. Although tomorrow morning in northwest Indiana, it's maybe a little bit dicey travel-wise there.
All right. Keep us posted. Nice to have you here on the Top 6 at 6.
Now, page 2.
And page 2 is the Democratic presidential debate. The candidates on stage again tonight, this time in South Carolina, ahead of that state's primary on Saturday. The debate tonight, hosted by CBS News and the Congressional Black Caucus Institute. It begins at 7 o'clock Central Time.
Page 3.
Markets in Europe mostly rose today, while shares in Asia fell, but at a far more moderate pace than yesterday, when concerns about the coronavirus outbreak's effects on the global economy prompted those sharp declines. We'll hear more about what to expect next from financial expert Terry Savage. She'll join us after the 8:30 news this morning.
Page 4.
Harvey Weinstein is facing up to 29 years in prison after a jury found him guilty yesterday in two felony sex crimes. At the trial, six women testified that he sexually assaulted them. Mr. Weinstein's lawyers said they would appeal the convictions, as well as the judge's decision to hold him in jail until his sentencing, which is set for March 11th. Harvey Weinstein is actually at Bellevue Hospital. He reported there last night, experiencing chest pains, heart palpitations, and high blood pressure, according to his attorney. He's expected to be transferred to the Rikers Island Correctional Facility when he is released from the hosni.
To whom it may concern.
Hosni Mubarak, the Egyptian leader who for nearly 30 years was the face of stability in the Mideast before being forced by the military to resign after nationwide protests that were part of the Arab world's 2011 pro-democracy upheaval, has died. Hosni Mubarak was 91.
Stand by for news.
And finally, people still buzzing about the public memorial for Kobe Bryant and the other victims of that horrible helicopter crash. Yesterday, 20,000 people at the Staples Center, fans, athletes, celebrities, and it was quite an assortment of various people from different walks of life who had connections with Kobe. Musical numbers by Beyonce, Alicia Keys, and Christina Aguilera. And they even showed Dear Basketball, Kobe Bryant's Academy Award-winning short film. I had never seen that before. It is tremendous. It's animation and Kobe's voice, and it's really something. It's really moving. And then they showed that at the Staples Center as part of the memorial. Jimmy Kimmel was terrific as the host. He welcomed the crowd. We have some of the audio now from a couple of the emotional highlights. First, we're going to hear from, are we going to hear from Vanessa first? Okay, this is Vanessa Bryant, who remembered Kobe and her 13-year-old Gigi, who she described as an amazingly sweet and gentle soul, and Kobe as her soulmate. Here's Vanessa Bryant.
God knew they couldn't be on this earth without each other. He had to bring them home to heaven together. Babe, you take care of our Gigi. And I got Nani, Bibi, and Coco. We're still the best team. We love and miss you, Boo Boo and Gigi. May you both rest in peace and have fun in heaven until we meet again one day. We love you both and miss you forever and always.
And in a tearful speech, Michael Jordan said he took great pride in the relationship they had built. Here's a bit of Michael, who had tears streaming down his face as he spoke.
When Kobe Bryant died, a piece of me died. And as I look in this arena and across the globe, a piece of you died. Or else you wouldn't be here. Those are the memories that we have to live with and we learn from. I promise you, from this day forward, I will live with the memories of knowing that I had a little brother that I tried to help in every way I could. Please, rest in peace, little brother.
You've got to hear that entire Michael Jordan speech, and we're going to play it for you at about 7:18 this morning. It's really something when you hear it in its entirety. Michael was unbelievable.
I think with all that he has accomplished on and off the court, and this is probably going to be looked at as a kind of a defining moment for him, where people saw a different side of Michael Jordan than they saw in all those years when he was dominating the game.
And as I mentioned earlier, he gave that speech pretty much off the top of his head. He looked at his notes just a couple of times, and all the while, tears streaming down his face. He was quite eloquent, and there was a laugh in there, and you'll hear it when we replay the speech at 7:18. There was a laugh in there when Michael said, "Hey, Kobe, you got me again, because I'm going to have to look at this replay of crying like this for years to come." There were a few laughs. Shaq got the biggest laugh in the service. He made a sort of profane joke about an exchange where Shaq told Kobe there was no I in team, and Bryant responded by noting, "There is an M-E, me," and Shaq used a double expletive in telling that story. And Shaq also got a laugh when he said he promised to coach Kobe's kids, but not to instruct them on his free throw technique. Vanessa Bryant has filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the company that operated the helicopter that crashed. The complaint in Los Angeles County Superior Court against Fillmore-based Island Express Holding Corporation and Island Express Helicopters alleges that the pilot, who also died in the crash, failed to use ordinary care in piloting the subject aircraft. That's the line from the lawsuit, and was negligent. So that lawsuit filed by Vanessa Bryant yesterday. Yeah, I watched the whole 2 hours yesterday, and after I did, I couldn't function properly yesterday, all day and all night. I mean, if you have a chance to go back and find it online, or if NBA TV replays that, I'm not sure if they are. I haven't heard about that. But if you watch the whole thing, it's really something. And even if you weren't a basketball fan or, really didn't follow Kobe Bryant's career, it still gets to you. Especially if you're a parent, I think. It was quite something. And Jimmy Kimmel, very emotional, and he really kind of kept the whole program together. 20,000 people in the Staples Center yesterday afternoon for that. Also, Bryant's longtime agent, Rob Pelinka, who's his close friend, recalled his final texts from Kobe just minutes before he was killed. Apparently, Kobe was sitting in the helicopter texting, and Pelinka was his agent for like 20 years, right?
Yeah, he was general manager of the Lakers. He's a local guy. He's from Lake Forest.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I believe, yeah.
He was fantastic at the memorial. He said that Kobe was trying to secure an internship for the daughter of another friend who was actually sitting with him in the chopper, and so he was trying to do a favor for somebody in the last minutes of his life. I mean, this whole memorial, we knew something about Kobe the man, and we knew about his accomplishments, but you know, not only were all of his athletic endeavors relived, but you heard about what he did as a friend, as a husband, as a father. It's certainly not a perfect person. Nobody is. But what an example this guy set for everybody.
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Saras on WGN Radio.
Good day.
Last night around 6, I turned on the news on TV because I wanted to find out what the weather situation was. And I swear, instead of finding out the forecast, I got like 10 minutes of explanations that I did not understand of why yesterday's forecast was wrong. And I didn't know what this particular weather person was talking about, and I had no idea what the forecast was after I finished watching. I don't want to say who it was. His initials were Brant Miller. He did have his glasses on, though, so I knew it was a serious forecast, because when he wears his glasses, there's something special is going on. So I could tell that I needed to pay attention, because he was wearing his glasses on TV last night. But I swear, I don't want weather history. I don't want to know what happened with a glacier somewhere off the coast of Alaska that caused all this. Just tell me what's going on.
It's pretty simple. did you finally get an explanation that you understood?
The
jet stream apparently adjusted a little bit, and it pushed this storm further south. And so that, in the nutshell, is why we're not going to get snow. So the brunt of this storm is now about 200 miles southeast of here, and it's going to stay there because the jet stream is pushing it further south.
Okay, so what I got, though, that I can understand, but I got, and I admit that, you know, I don't know anything about anything, but what I got when I turned on the news was the scientific explanation of all of this. So I need a couple of things when I turn on the news to get the weather. I want it done in English, unless I'm watching with my wife, then Spanish is okay because she'll translate. And I just want a simple, okay, what is it like out the door now, and maybe what is it going to be like later? That's all I need to know. And I don't even need to know about, well, I guess if I'm making plans in the summer, maybe I need to know about the weekend. But I'll find out about that later. I don't need to know that now. I don't need history. I don't need to know what happened on this day 100 years ago.
Right.
Just tell me what's going on outside, please.
Well, for some of us who are weather nerds, we appreciate that. So maybe there's a happy medium somewhere.
Anyway. Some people do a better job of explaining it than other people. That's all I'm saying. Although I do like the fact that I pay attention. Like when Brand puts on the glasses, I do pay attention. So I like that technique. That, you know, if I'm going to wear glasses during my weather forecast, there's going to be some weather that you need to hear about. I do like that. That's a nice technique.
Did you feel faked out last night then?
Faked out, Joe? What?
Yeah, fake. Did you feel like it was a tease? Like he put the glasses on and it wasn't really for a real reason?
Well, actually, you know what? Now that you mentioned it, he should have, like during his weathercast, he should have started with the glasses on, then taken them off and said, I'm taking off my glasses now because apparently we're not going to get that big storm. Actually, you're right. He should have done that.
You know, Tom wears his glasses every
Tom Skilling, yeah, because he's always serious.
Yeah, yeah, so
I know there's something about Tom that he does the weather, and I know on the news on Channel 9 they give him like what is it 38 minutes for the weather,
but
I like it, and there's something about the way he explains it, even though he knows more about weather than anybody else.
Yep.
He somehow makes it more palatable. I don't know why that is.
He's
something
very
about
cheery
him.
About it.
Yeah. He, right.
He's happy about it.
He's happy.
Whether it's bad or whatever.
Right. He's friendly.
Tom could do the whole hour-long newscast as the weather, and I'd be happy with that.
Right. Me too.
I'd sit and watch the whole thing.
I like that.
Yeah.
I guess it's the way he does that. You know, I say, I don't want the weather history. I don't want explanations. Just tell me what's going on. But there's something about the way Tom does all that, and you don't feel like he's talking over your head. Maybe that's it.
Well, plus, there's nobody who loves weather more than Tom.
Now, that's another good
point.
That
comes across.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. You're right about that. Oh, man. Yeah, I was flipping around last night, and I got so disturbed about that I ended up watching two Munsters reruns instead. That is a
two?
Great show. Yeah, there
two?
Were two. Yeah, there were two.
Can you give us the synopsis?
Well, one, Herman was... He was in a movie. They asked him to be in a movie in one of the episodes. And then in another one, he was the victim of some scam where some people were trying to cheat an insurance company out of some money. And so they were looking for somebody to pose as the victim of an auto accident. And they looked at Herman Munster and they said, well, this guy looks like he needs help. He's been seriously injured, so we'll use him. But they didn't tell him they were doing that.
Yeah, he thought he was the good-looking guy for the role.
What a fantastic show. I have to talk to the grand, high, exalted, mystic ruler of this company who runs Antenna TV about getting the Munsters on Antenna TV because that's one of the all-time great shows. It's so funny. And Al Lewis as Grandpa.
Oh, he's the best.
Oh, man.
I should have watched that instead of The Bachelor. What a waste
yeah,
of like 2 hours.
Exactly.
Time.
Exactly.
Oh, show is getting ridiculous.
Which Munsters is much clever. Much
so
more clever.
Weren't there two actresses playing Marilyn, though? Which one was it? Do you remember?
Somebody, a Priest is her last name. There were two Marilyns, really?
There were two Marilyns.
I didn't know that.
Pat Priest,
right.
Yes.
Yeah, the fact that I know
sure
that
the,
is
I'm not
disturbing.
Sure the other one.
Yeah. That's funny, too, because they think she is looks horrific, right?
Yes.
yes.
Poor kid.
the normal person. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the writing is clever. And I found out that the people behind the Munsters who write that show are the same people behind another one of my favorites, Leave It to Beaver. So you're listening to the guy criticizing Brant Miller now who watches The Munsters and Leave It to Beaver. Okay. I rest my case. No further questions, Your Honor. We were talking last week about a study that came out saying the scent of a romantic partner can improve sleep. And we wanted to talk a little bit more about that. So Dr. Hal Stewart joins us now. He specializes in sleep breathing disorders. He's the CEO of the Stewart Center. And Doc, I wanted to ask you if there was anything to this study, if you've had a chance to go through it. What do you think?
Well, hey, good morning. It's great to be here. I always love sharing with your listeners. It's an interesting study, and I have no doubt that just like when you were a child, you had your favorite teddy bear or blanket that gave you comfort to sleep with. As far as treating a sleeping disorder, I would have to be very skeptical about that and say that that's probably not the case. But it certainly doesn't hurt to put that into your routine if that is comforting to a person and makes them makes their thoughts go to a happy place, then I'm all for it.
For this study, the researchers analyzed sleep data from 155 participants who were given two identical-looking T-shirts to use as pillowcases. One had been previously worn by their romantic partner. The other had either been previously worn by a stranger or was clean. And the reaction from people who were sleeping with a familiar scent was that they just got a better night's sleep. So does this mean I have a good excuse now for telling my wife not to put my T-shirt in the laundry, but rather just, you know, sleep with it? It'll help her?
Well, that all depends on what kind of relationship you have with your wife. Yeah. If you're snoring all night, I don't think the T-shirt's going to help her any. The study showed a 2% increase in sleep efficiency. Their definition of sleep efficiency was not given in the study that I read, so I don't actually know what that exactly means. But there was a subjective and an objective 2% increase.
You lecture and teach. You deal with sleep disorders. How important is light, smell, what we're smelling, other factors that help us during the night or hinder us?
Well, the vast majority of obstructive sleep disorders are an anatomical problem, and so that's something that needs to be treated medically. But anybody can follow good sleep hygiene, and no matter what your level of sleep apnea or snoring is, you can get a better night's sleep by doing a few of the following things. Don't watch any TV or look at a screen for at least an hour before you go to bed. No caffeine, no alcohol, at least a couple of hours before you go to bed, and stay in a routine. Go to sleep at the same time, get up at the same time, and a bare minimum is 6 hours. 7 is ideal. 7 to 8 is ideal. Background noise helps some people. I know I love to sleep for the white noise in the background. I've got a little air filter by my bed. And when I go to a hotel, I have that same app on my phone that just, it's a quiet background. I don't like complete silence. To me, complete silence is almost deafening. So I like a little bit of noise. I wouldn't recommend the TV because, again, you get the blue screen, even though you're not looking at it. The blue does penetrate through your eyelids, and you can sense that that's on. So just good sleep hygiene is important all the way around. It's not necessarily the cure, but it will help.
I've been talking to many doctors lately about sleep, and you can tell, you know why. And what I'm hearing is these studies that suggest a certain number of hours of sleep as being the healthiest are not really that reliable because everybody is so different. You can have somebody who does quite well on, you know, 5 hours sleep and somebody else who needs like 9 hours sleep. So I'm hearing not to place too much, on those studies because our individual needs differ so much. Is that true?
No, it's really not. Because when someone says, I do fine on 5 hours sleep, what does that mean? When I had a severe sleep disordered breathing, that severe sleep apnea, I would sleep 4 or 5 hours a night, and then I would have energy all day long. And the reason why is because I had to keep moving, or I would go to sleep during the day. So everybody would say, wow, you got so much energy. Mm. I was basically forcing myself to do that. Just like everybody across the board needs oxygen, there's nobody on this earth that doesn't need oxygen. Sleep is the same thing. Sleep is the rebooting of our brain, just like a computer. When you have, you know, the computer gets all jumbled up, a lot of times just shut it down and reboot it, and so many problems literally solve themselves. If we don't get rejuvenating sleep, at least 6 hours every night, and we go through those phases of REM, our body does not heal itself and it stays in a chronic state of inflammation. Inflammation is the driver of just about every disease out there. And as a matter of fact, a well-respected study that's been quoted throughout the medical and dental community is one done about 5-7 years ago. I'll get the details on it, but it shows that if you don't average 6 hours of sleep, long-term, cumulatively, you will increase your risk of cancer, not any certain kind, but of a cancer by 2 times. So you're twice the risk if you're not getting a minimum of 6 hours of sleep.
So 6 is the magic number. I'll remember that.
Yeah, 7's ideal. Mm-hmm. 8 you know, 6 to 8, just that range, 6 to 8.
I agree with everything you're saying, Dr. Stewart, except for one thing, the television. I often fall asleep with the television on, and I'm convinced that that helps me go to sleep and that I'm getting good, restful sleep. Do you think I'm not, just because the television is on in the bedroom as I'm going to sleep?
Well, you know, that's one of many things. I will give you this, that there are certain things with sleep hygiene that do work for people and other things that don't, and other things that really don't make a difference. So you could possibly be one of these that, you know, having the TV on doesn't bother at all. I don't really get hung up on that. If there is somebody, though, that I have diagnosed with a sleep disorder breathing, those are some of the things that I say, you know, here's a list of 10 things. Try to do 8 of them or 6 of them. I like to make it realistic for the patient. And then once they see an improvement, then they can go on and say, well, you know, I think I'll do this or do that instead. So, you know, if some of the other things I mentioned seem feasible for you, but you don't want to give up the TV, then don't do it. But you really don't know what kind of sleep and rest you're getting unless you have a sleep study. Have you ever had a sleep study?
Nope. Uh-uh.
Yeah. You ought to go to a sleep physician or sleep dentist, and you could do a home sleep study with a FDA approved home sleep study, like we use the WatchBat. It's not as thorough as a polysomnogram where you go to a lab, but it gives a lot of really good information, and it's much better than these apps that you can get on your cell phone. Home sleep study runs anywhere from $100 to $200, and that's for the use of the machine and then the full diagnosis afterwards.
Doc, you can bring in specialists, experts, scientists from around the world. They can examine my head. They'll find nothing in there, believe me. Dr. Hal Stewart, sleep expert. Always good to check in with you, sir. Have a good
yeah,
day.
Yeah, I appreciate
thank
it. You do too. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
It is 10 after 7. We like checking in with Block Club Chicago for some extremely local news here on the program. Jen Sabella has that for us. Good morning, Jen. Let's start with the breaking weed news.
Good morning, Bob. Yeah. Yes, our reporter Mia Bloom in Logan Square heard yesterday that there has been a space, it's been vacant for 11 years, it's on the border of Hermosa and Logan Square, so this is about 2537 North Pulaski Road, and it's this old marble warehouse, and this group last year wanted to bring in a big music venue, and the neighborhood was just not having it. They were like, there's going to be too much traffic, it's going to be too loud, too many people. So this new group wants to come in, and this is very unique. We know that everyone's vying for dispensaries in Chicago and in the state right now. But this group wants to make a farm in this, like an indoor weed farm in this old marble plant. And they want it to be like a combination of a dispensary and a grow operation. And the goal is to make it like the space is huge. It's a giant warehouse. So to make it like a kind of a brewery, like a craft brewery feeling for a dispensary, which so far, if you've seen some of the places around Chicago and around the state, they're pretty small. They're pretty like blocked off. You can't really look inside. This, she wants it to be, the group is called Perception Farms. They want it to be like open and airy and have like a glass where you could see the farm while you're in the dispensary. So yeah, there's a public meeting happening on Wednesday, actually, tomorrow at 6 p.m. And neighbors who already rejected the music venue will get to decide if this is something that they're into.
Why do I think that by the end of the year there will be a pot business on every block in Chicago?
People are really trying to make it happen. This is a little interesting. I mean, we've heard all the pushback from people about how the people who've opened dispensaries so far, it's been overwhelmingly white. And when the state bill passed, the people who created the bill wanted it to be more equitable for people who have been, you know, had pot convictions or neighborhoods who have seen a lot of the people in their neighborhoods go to jail for marijuana possession. So this farm is saying that they would hire, 60 people, and they would want like 100% of their staff to be social equity employees. So these would be people who have been convicted of carrying marijuana, have lived in a community that has been disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. So they're kind of coming out with this, you know, out the gate before even meeting with neighbors saying, hey, we're going to do this the right way. So we'll see what neighbors have to say about it.
Yeah, that's on Milwaukee Avenue. Where is this?
It's on Pulaski, so it's like it's pretty far west on Pulaski. It is near, I think, like Pulaski and Belmont.
Got it.
Yeah, Pulaski, and yeah, just south of Belmont.
Let's move now to the area just south of Rose Hill Cemetery. What's going on there?
So this is wild. You know, we've seen all of these big developments pop up. We've seen Lincoln Yards, the 78, basically these new neighborhoods created as all of these industrial plants kind of cash in on the demand for real estate, particularly on the north side of the city. Temple Steel has a 21-acre campus in Bowmanville, which is, just near Rose Hill Cemetery. If you've been over there, it's, you know, Half Acres, Balmoral Taproom. There's a kind of a lot of breweries clustered in this area. And yeah, they are selling the property. So they're going to move out. They're going to consolidate, move to a more like high tech factory, probably in the suburbs or somewhere else in the state. And they are, you know, they said it's a blank slate. So whether someone wants to come in and build housing, they want to build businesses, another office campus, it's kind of open for whatever. But our reporter, Alex Hernandez, talked to the alderman, Andre Vasquez, who, if you remember, he ran for alderman on the promise that he would bring more affordable housing to the neighborhood, which is around like Lincoln Square, where, you know, there's a lot of single family homes. There's not a ton of affordable housing in the area. And he came out the gate saying, you know what, like before any real estate developers come in, just be ready to make it, you know, at least some of these properties affordable. So if you do want to bring real, like, condos or luxury housing to this area, he's saying that some of it is going to have to be affordable, which might scare off some developers, frankly. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what comes of it. So it's such a huge space. It really could be kind of like another Lincoln Yards or another 78 popping up in Bowmanville.
We shall see. There's your extremely local news update. Jen Sabella, Block Club Chicago. Thanks as always, Jen. We'll talk to you tomorrow. The news clips of the Michael Jordan speech at the Kobe Bryant Memorial, I don't think did him justice. You need to hear the whole thing. So we're going to do something a little different now. This is the entire speech that Michael gave, mostly without notes, tears streaming down his face. Here it is.
I'm grateful to Vanessa and the Bryant family for the opportunity to speak today. I'm grateful to be here to honor Gigi and celebrate the gift that Kobe gave us all. What he accomplished as a basketball player, as a businessman and a storyteller, and as a father. In the game of basketball, in life, as a parent, Kobe left nothing in the tank. He left it all on the floor. Maybe it surprised people that Kobe and I were very close friends. But we were very close friends. Kobe was my dear friend. He was like a little brother. Everyone always wanted to talk about the comparisons between he and I. I just wanted to talk about Kobe. You know, all of us have brothers and sisters, little brothers, little sisters who, for whatever reason, I always tend to get in your stuff, your closet, your shoes, everything. It was a nuisance, if I can say that word. But that nuisance turned into love over a period of time, just because the admiration that they have for you as big brothers or big sisters. The questions, the wanting to know every little detail about life that they were about to embark on. He used to call me, text me, 11:30, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, talking about post-up moves, footwork, and sometimes the triangle. At first, it was an aggravation. But then it turned into a certain passion. This kid had passion like you would never know. And it's an amazing thing about passion. If you love something, if you have a strong passion for something, you would go to the extreme to try to understand or try to get it. Either ice cream, Cokes, hamburgers, whatever you have a love for. If you have to walk, you would go get it. If you have to beg someone, you would go get it. What Kobe Bryant was to me was the inspiration that someone truly cared about the way I played the game or the way that he wanted to play the game. He wanted to be the best basketball player that he could be. And as I got to know him, I wanted to be the best big brother that I could be. To do that, you had to put up with the aggravation, the late night calls, or the dumb questions. I took great pride as I got to know Kobe Bryant that he was just trying to be a better person, a better basketball player. We talked about business. We talked about family. We talked about everything. And he was just trying to be a better person. Now he's got me. I'll have to look at another crime meme for the Knicks. I told my wife I wasn't going to do this because I didn't want to see that for the next 3 or 4 years. That is what Kobe Bryant does to me. I'm pretty sure Vanessa and his friends all can say the same thing. He knows how to get to you in a way that affects you personally, even though if he's being a pain in the ass. But you ever have a sense of love for him and the way that he can bring out the best in you. And he did that for me. I remember maybe a couple of months ago, he sends me a text. And he's saying, I'm trying to teach my daughter some moves. And I don't know what I was thinking or what I was working on. But what were you thinking about when you were trying to work on your moves? I said, what age? He says, 12. I said, 12, I was trying to play baseball. He sends me a text back saying, laughing my ass off. And this is at 2 o'clock in the morning. But the thing about him was we could talk about anything that related to basketball, but we can talk about anything that related to life. And we, as we grow up in life, rarely have friends that we can have conversations like that. Well, it's even rare when you can grow up against adversaries and have conversations like that.
I went and saw Phil Jackson in 1999 or maybe 2000. I don't know when Phil was here in L.A. And I walk in and Kobe's sitting there. And the first thing, I'm in a suit. First thing Kobe said, did you bring your shoes? No, I wasn't thinking about playing. But his attitude to compete and play against someone he felt like he could enhance and improve his game with. To me, that's what I loved about the kid. Absolutely loved about the kid. No matter where he saw me, it was a challenge. And I admired him because his passion, you rarely see someone who's looking and trying to improve each and every day, and not just in sports, but as a parent, as a husband. I am inspired by what he's done and what he shared with Vanessa and what he's shared with his kids. I have a daughter who's 30, who just became a grandparent. And I have two twins. I have twins at 6. I can't wait to get home to become a girl dad and to hug them and to see the love that they, and the smiles that they bring to us as parents. He taught me that just by looking at this tonight, looking at how he responded and reacted with the people they actually loved. These are the things that we will continue to learn from Kobe Bryant. To Vanessa, Natalia, Bianca, Capri, my wife and I will keep you close in our hearts and our prayers. We will always be here for you, always. I also want to offer our condolences and support to all the families affected by this enormous tragedy. Kobe gave every last ounce of himself to whatever he was doing. After basketball, he showed a creative side to himself that I didn't think any of us knew he had. In retirement, he seemed so happy. He found new passions, and he continued to give back as a coach in his community. More importantly, he was an amazing dad, amazing husband, who dedicated himself to his family and who loved his daughters with all his heart. Kobe never left anything on the court. And I think that's what he would want for us to do. No one knows how much time we have. That's why we must live in the moment. We must enjoy the moment. We must reach and see and spend as much time as we can with our families and friends and the people that we absolutely love. To live in the moment means to enjoy each and every one that we come in contact with. When Kobe Bryant died, a piece of me died. And as I look in this arena and across the globe, a piece of you died, or else you wouldn't be here. Those are the memories that we have to live with and we learn from. I promise you, from this day forward, I will live with the memories of knowing that I had a little brother that I tried to help in every way I could. Please, rest in peace, little brother.
A well-deserved standing ovation at the Staples Center for Michael Jordan, like we've never heard or seen him before. I thought that warranted a full replay. As you heard, there's a winter weather advisory tonight and Wednesday for the city near west and south. The winter storm watch tonight and Wednesday for northwest Indiana. Here's my problem. I don't know the difference between a watch, a warning, and an advisory. That's why we've called in Mike Hammernick, WGN meteorologist, to explain. What's a watch, what's a warning, and what's an advisory, Mike?
Usually it's the amount of snow. A warning or a watch is issued when you're expecting 6 or more inches of snow. In general, that's not always the case, but in general it's the case. An advisory, anywhere from 2 to as much as 5 inches of snow is usually issued. So it's the amount of snow for an advisory, and then a watch and a warning, usually the heavier amounts. A watch means about a 50-50 chance that this is going to happen. A warning means about an 80 to 90% chance it's going to happen. So we're still under the watch as far as Northwest Indiana is concerned. So there's a chance we could still see some substantial snow, but those chances appear to be dwindling by the hour. So right now I'm thinking that this watch for Northwest Indiana will probably be replaced with an advisory sometime later on this morning, because it doesn't look like we're going to make that 6-inch mark across Northwest Indiana, looking more like a 2-, 3-, 4-inch snow for the south suburbs and Northwest Indiana. And you head north and west of the city, and boy, many areas of the northwest suburbs into southern Wisconsin are going to be left high and dry as this storm system is passing much further south than expected 48 hours ago by 200 miles. You know, we usually don't miss a storm by 200 miles 48 hours out anymore, but this one was the case. It's kind of an unusual one, but it looks like it's going to pass well to our south, and that's going to keep us here in Chicago out of the brunt of the heavier snow.
No complaints. Don't worry,
yeah,
Mike.
Yeah, in late February. You know, maybe okay. In December you want it, but late February, yeah. I'll pass.
That's
I'll
enough pass. Of it already. Yeah. I appreciate the update.
Sure thing, Bob.
This is kind of scary, if you ask me. Amazon getting more serious about its brick-and-mortar retail ambitions with its first-ever Amazon-branded grocery store. It's opening today in Seattle's Capitol Hill District. Let's see. It's going to be a cashierless store, and it's modeled after a standard Amazon Go location. It's been expanded, though, to include a wide array of grocery items that you would find at, say, Whole Foods, which is owned by Amazon. They still have the slogan, "Why pay less?" I think so. This new Amazon store sources a number of its items, including some produce and meat from other fresh food and other fresh food from Whole Foods suppliers. It also carries Whole Foods 365 brand. But Amazon store has other products, including breakfast cereal and soda, that you don't find at their higher-end organic-focused Whole Foods. Amazon says the store combines product availability and low prices like a Publix or Walmart would have, with the convenience and quick shopping times of its Go model, with a selection that includes mainstream brands and local organic produce. They have 20 of these Go stores currently around the country, and I'm sure they'll be coming to Chicago.
We have one.
Is it open here, the grocery model?
Yeah, Amazon well, the Go? One where you just walk in and take what you want and... It's right. Right here on the pedal. You don't have to go outside.
But does that one carry grocery items?
Yeah.
It does.
Oh, sure.
So it's right here at 303 East Wacker?
It's not quite 303. It's a little bit west of here, right on Wacker, part of Illinois Center.
Amazon Go stores use overhead cameras and computer vision technology paired with smartphone geofencing to track shoppers and items throughout the store. That way, the system identifies when a specific person has picked something off the shelf and placed it in their cart, and even when they decided to put something back. So there's no checkout. When you're done, you just walk out, and your receipt is sent to you through Amazon's companion app.
Yeah, you just download the app, and you walk through, and, hey, there's a steak. I mean, I don't, not necessarily what you grab for lunch, but they have that.
Amazon's new grocery store features shopping carts, but no checkout lanes or counters. Well, what if you like to talk to the people who are at the checkout line, like I do? There's nobody there?
They have employees there. They're kind of keeping an eye on things if you have a question.
Well, I know there's somebody there if you buy alcohol. Somebody has to check your ID. Right. But other than that, it seems a little too space age for me. I didn't know they were right. They were right here in the
right
building.
There.
Look at that. What's that, Joe? Oh, OK. Getting the signal that be quiet already about this. You know, let's say good morning to Blackhawks coach Jeremy Colleton. Hey, Jeremy, how you doing today?
Morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Yeah, you have to love what Robin Leonard tweeted. What a great city. Fans were unbelievable, and I'm not going to forget the short time there. I believe in this team and still do. Pretty classy, wasn't it?
Yeah, Robin's great. He's made a big impact on the team. Obviously, played very well while he's here, and you know, we'll miss him, of course. And you know, Gus also. I mean, very, very popular guy in the room, and you know, he's been played very well for us at times over the last few years. And that's the human side of it. You never like losing people, and you know, obviously, it's the business that you get, but it's like families and kids involved, so it's kind of a. It's a dark time, but that's what the business we're in, and obviously, you know, the organization, we're trying to collect assets for the future here, and as a coach, we'll move on to the game tonight.
Once it's over, Jeremy, once the deadline passes, how much of a sense of relief is there for the guys who are still here? If it's relief, or you know, how would you characterize the emotions after the trade deadline?
That's probably a good word for it. As I said, it's the uncertainty is it's tough on the players, no question. And I think everyone is excited to get back to playing, and you know, it's a big game for us tonight. We want to show a response, bounce back from the loss against Dallas. I thought we played very hard. I thought we played well. You know, we were in the game, and it could have gone either way. But as I kind of been hammering this home to the group, we got to keep playing at a high level over and over again. The compete and the work ethic, and we're trying to build something, so we've got to continue with that approach.
Corey Crawford's playing at a very high level right now, which I guess is the saving grace in having to see Leonard go. But I mean, he stops a penalty shot on Sunday. Is this the best this year that Corey has played this recent stretch?
Yeah, he's been really good lately, and he's been good all year. But I think I don't know whether you could say it's a month or 2 months, but it's he's been excellent for you know, a lot of games now, and that's we need it. You know, that's goaltending's been good for us all year, and we need him to continue playing as he has.
Coach, we've been hearing a lot about these emergency goaltenders. Can I ask you, I have a dumb guy question that I want to ask you. Okay, so let's say that you have two goaltenders, and then your main guy gets injured, so your number two guy goes out there in goal, and then something happens to him. Now, these emergency goaltenders, they're like, you know, working at Walmart or something. So, you know, what happens? How do you get the emergency goaltender ready and there? You know what I'm saying here? I don't understand how that works.
Well, at every game, there is an emergency goaltender, and he's there for both teams.
He's there. And he's there in the stadium.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's there. So he typically he's just there. He watches the game. He has a nice evening out. You know, but if there is one of the goaltenders gets injured, then he gets a call. Like, you got to get down and get ready just in case. And then you know, if you're unfortunate to have two goalies injured, and that's your guy. So,
oh, okay, I see. So it's not like you gotta stop the game and get the guy Ubered in from his regular job. He's there already.
Exactly.
Well, it happened with the Blackhawks a couple of years ago. Scott Foster, who's an accountant, ended up playing in a game, and I think they also had to use one in Philadelphia a few years ago. So it does happen from time to time, but it certainly is unique. You're in a tough stretch, and I know there aren't easy ones, but this is a really demanding trip now. Dallas to St. Louis, the team that's leading the West. You've got Tampa Bay, which has been as hot as anybody in the National Hockey League. I guess this is a pretty good time of year. I mean, you've seen everybody, but you get tested now, don't you?
Yeah, no question. We're going to have to be at our best. But you know, we got to embrace that challenge. And you know, the focus for us, we got to keep getting better. We have to continue to have progression in our team. Our young players got to be better than they were a week ago, better than they were a month ago. And that's how we're going to make the next step as a team and get where we want to go. So that'll be the focus. And we're going to be, tonight, right from the start, we're going to have to be at our best. The work ethic's got to be there. The details away from the puck got to be there. And if they're not, then we're going to be in tough. But a lot of times that, knowing the situation you're in, that pushes you to be better.
Yeah, going into St. Louis to play the defending cup champs. Speaking of young players, you have another one who got his first taste of it on Sunday, and Lucas Carlson, 22-year-old defenseman, called up from Rockford. I assume he's going to play a lot now, especially with Gustafson gone, right?
Yeah, I had him in Rockford, really liked him down there, was excited to see how he'd react to his first NHL chance. I thought he did very well. He didn't look tentative at all. He was aggressive. He was poised. He made some strong plays with the puck. He was physical, defended well. So, that's very positive. And now the challenge is to help him find consistency, trying to do it every night. That's tough, right? As you come up in your first experience in the NHL. So a lot of guys can do it for a game or a couple games, but to have something lasting, you want to be able to find that consistency every night.
Well, let's hope for a positive finish to the season, Jeremy. All the best to you. Thanks for talking with us this morning.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
And we'll hear from the Bears today, too, right, Dave? Because the NFL scouting combine is today.
Well, they're getting together. This is where they get to Indianapolis. They meet with the players who are at the combine. The actual testing, as far as the on-the-field stuff, this comes up a little later, I think, on Thursday. But the teams get down there and they can interview the players and all the top players who are participating are on hand. So this morning, Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy are both going to speak to the media for the first time since the season ended for the Bears, and so maybe we'll get a little insight from them on what their plans are. Maybe we won't.
A lot of questions. Yes. I don't know if we'll have any answers. So you got football news, hockey, basketball, baseball. This is the time of year where you get everything at the same time.
You gotta love it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure this is your favorite time of year, isn't it?
It is a great time of year. It is. It's a lot of fun. And college basketball getting down the stretch now. We're only 2.5 weeks from Selection Sunday, and the NCAA tournament gets going. So, yeah.
And how about Illinois? Big win last night. They needed that.
Yeah, they needed to get that win. Now they come to Evanston to take on Northwestern on Thursday night. And that's also a game that they need, and Northwestern's desperate just to get a win. And these games usually come down to the wire. Trust me on that.
No, I do. I do trust you. Coming up, Dean Richards' entertainment report after the 8 o'clock news. We haven't checked in with Dean just yet, but I'm sure he will be talking about some of the performers who were at that Kobe Bryant memorial yesterday. That ceremony included some terrific musical numbers from Beyonce, Alicia Keys, and Christina Aguilera. And what was amazing is, Alicia Keys played Moonlight Sonata, and a story was told yesterday how Kobe, who didn't know anything about playing the piano, learned that so he could play it for his wife. How do you do that? Unbelievable. And that's, as was pointed out during the memorial yesterday, that's one of the most complicated piano pieces of all time, and he learned it and played it for her. So it's one of the many things we learned in that memorial yesterday that we will be talking about coming up. It's 10 after 8. Time to check in with Dean Richards momentarily, get the entertainment report. People still talking about that Kobe Bryant memorial, 20,000 people in the Staples Center in Los Angeles yesterday for that midday event that featured musical numbers by Beyonce and Alicia Keys and Christina Aguilera. And I watched the whole 2 hours, and I'm still not recovered. It was unbelievably emotional. And they also, as part of that, showed the short film, the animated film that won the Oscar for Kobe Bryant, Dear Basketball. I had never seen that. It was really, really terrific. And Dean, I don't know whether you ever had a chance to see that short, Dear Basketball, but I mean, Kobe's voice was amazing and the animation was spectacular. It deserved an Oscar.
Oh, definitely. Great movie. It was a great movie. It represented a great turning of the page, you know, a new chapter in his life after retirement from basketball. It was great. But to me, nothing was greater than that Michael Jordan speech yesterday.
Yeah, we replayed the whole thing here a little while ago. I mean, the fact that he did it mostly without notes. He looked at his notes only a couple of times. He was like we had never seen him before and never heard him like that before, and just tears streaming down his face through the entire talk.
Yeah, that was the thing, is that, you know, he was clearly very emotionally moved by the whole thing and didn't stop. You know, other people would have, you know, stopped, give me a Kleenex. You know, wouldn't want to be seen as being, you know, quote, weak by crying. That's Michael Jordan. That's why he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah, and greater than ever yesterday.
And the line about not wanting to become a meme in the middle of this just gut-wrenching, heart-rendering speech. And then he drops that hilarious joke in the middle of the whole thing was just so great and so funny.
Yeah, talking about how, you know, well, Kobe got me now because I'm going to have to look at this for years to come, me trying to get through this and crying.
Yeah, and he knew good and well that that was going to happen. And sure enough, within about 5 minutes of that actually happening, sure enough, there were memes out.
Of course.
Well, see, there's been a crying Jordan meme for years.
Right.
And that's what he was referring to, for those who don't know.
Yes, I'm glad you reminded us of that. And that originally was from what event? It may have been after the speech. Was it after his father died?
No,
that have been?
Wasn't it the Hall of Fame?
I think it was the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. When he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, I think.
Well,
I knew something in sports that Dave didn't know. Somebody marked this tape. That is never going to happen again in 1,000 years.
And how about the performances yesterday from Beyonce and Alicia Keys and Christina Aguilera?
Yeah.
Just spectacular.
Yeah, very, very emotional, very heartfelt. And note to self, if I ever have Shaquille O'Neal on the show, have the delay running.
Yeah, he was funny, though. I will say that. And Jimmy Kimmel, just perfect as the MC.
Yeah, it was a really nice event, you know, considering that it was, you know, so sad, you know, the reason for it all. But such a beautiful, beautiful memorial. You know, we should all hope to be remembered in such loving and, you know, touching ways like that.
Absolutely.
Whereas, like, my memorial, they're going to play the Victory Auto Records commercial.
Well,
and then everyone's going to go home.
People are moved to tears by that, Dean.
Wrong reasons.
Well, let's get to Justin Bieber breaking Elvis's record. Mission Impossible 7 halted. And more on Harvey Weinstein. We'll do that. Now Dean Richards will explain why we're listening to Justin Bieber.
I wanted to play Yummy, 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 I've Got Love in My Tummy, but this is the more contemporary current one. Who did that song, Bob? DJ Quiz.
Who did Yummy, Yummy?
Yummy, 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 I Got Love in My Tummy.
Back
in the day.
That was not the Ohio Express.
That's actually what I was going to say, was it?
It was the immortal group called...
The Archies?
Yeah.
Was it the Archies?
Yes, I believe it. I believe it was.
Welcome to our new segment: Two Old Guys Trying to Remember Stuff. Bieber's song "Yummy" is one of the songs on his new album that's called "Changes." That album has broken a nearly 60-year record on the Billboard charts. "Changes" is Bieber's seventh number one charting song for the 25-year-old singer, so that makes him the youngest person ever to have that many number one albums in his young career. The previous holder of that record was a 26-year-old Elvis Presley with the 1961 release of his Blue Hawaii album.
It was, by the way, it was the Ohio Express.
Was it?
I just checked. Oh, yeah,
good.
1968.
All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Blue Hawaii album that gave us Can't Help Falling in Love with You and It's Now or Never and some, you know, classic Elvis hits, now beaten by Bieber on the charts for seven number one albums by the age of 25 years old.
Not bad, but you know, the way they count this, I don't understand how they count this anymore, because now it's all about downloads, and it's not just record sales, right?
Well, you know what? I honestly, I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure what Billboard bases their Hot 100 on anymore. It used to be record sales, and then it became record sales, and somehow they were able to measure radio airplay. I mean, radio stations used to report it. That wasn't super reliable, but then they were able to do it without radio stations reporting it. So maybe it's a combination of all those things. But yes, downloading has a part of it now. Songs that are, you know, picked up on Apple Music and the various online platforms.
I'll have to check when I go to the Little Al's Record Store Friday for my free copy of the Silver Dollar Survey. I'll check that out.
Note to WGN management: would it kill you to have a WGN Silver Dollar Survey each week?
Also in the music department today, they announced the headliners for the Chicago Blues Fest.
Yeah, you know, for fans of the Blues Fest, this is kind of a big deal. It's going to be it's really kind of the kickoff weekend of summer always. This year it will be June 5th, 6th, and 7th at Millennium Park downtown. And the headliners will be Shamika Copeland, which is a very big deal, Chicago blues and soul vocalist, the First Lady of Southern Soul, Candy Staton, and also Memphis guitar legend Eric Gales. They will each be headlining the three respective nights of that weekend. But over the course of Blues Fest, they're going to have like eight or nine stages up like they always do. You're going to have something like 35 different performers for Jazz Fest. And actually, Blues Fest begins in the month of May at different venues around the city this year. So that's something that's a little bit new. So fans of the blues, there's some good stuff coming up.
Yeah, and I also see that they're, as part of this, they're going to have a tribute to Chicago's blues legacy and the 70th anniversary of Chess Records. They're going to do that in June. And I've been on my soapbox about Chess Records there on South Michigan Avenue for a long time, how they should really spiff it up, turn it into a first-class tourist attraction, the way, you know, Memphis does with
Beale
Sun
Street.
And Beale Street and Detroit with Motown. We have to sort of embrace our history there, and hopefully this will be a step in that direction.
Couldn't agree with you more. I was I hosted a panel, it'd be about a year ago, something like that, of people who were involved in the making of the Chicago, not even the blues scene, but the music that was recorded on South Michigan Avenue, some of the most influential popular songs of all time.
Record Row.
Recorded right down on South Michigan Avenue. And it's amazing to me also that that area does not have some sort of historical designation.
Yeah, you know, what kills me is if you visit Memphis and you go to Sun Studios there, they have an exhibit there about Chess, but we don't really have the proper exhibits in the original Chess building on South Michigan Avenue. Yeah. I mean, they do some tours, and they've cleaned it up a bit there, but there's so much more that could be done there that would make that a great attraction. And I'm told that when we have Blues Fest here, people from all over the world migrate to South Michigan Avenue because they've heard about Chess, and they want to go there, and there's more interest from Europe than there is in Chicago.
I was down there when the Rolling Stones were in town, And we went to the Chess studios, the actual studios where the Rolling Stones recorded. We were there for purposes of the Rolling Stones, but where they recorded with Muddy Waters and like some of the blues greats in Chicago, to stand in that room.
It's amazing, isn't
where
it?
Where these legends recorded is quite amazing.
Yeah, they have that track, the Stones recorded a track, an instrumental track called 2120, referring to 2120 South Michigan.
Yeah, it's the address, which is why I'm happy to announce my Dean Richards blues tour that I'm going to be doing this summer, where I will actually be driving people around in my car.
You should.
And we'll go there, and then we'll shoot over to Manny's Deli.
Okay, I'll join you there.
Yeah, and we'll, you know, we're going to just make a whole day of it.
We mentioned earlier that Mission Impossible 7, the production has been halted. What happened?
Yeah, they the coronavirus.
Oh, my.
As we've been hearing on the news, how it's hitting certain cities in Italy, they were scheduled to do about 4 weeks of shooting of this the Tom Cruise series in Venice. And the Paramount Pictures has decided to halt production on the whole thing, just to be on the safe side. Nothing has happened. Nobody has come down as testing positive. But they just decided to hold off a little bit. So they have 200 people there working on this movie. And they're just hanging out until things settle down a little bit, or they can be relatively sure that everyone's going to be okay. But the film was supposed to come out in July, not this year, but July of next year. So this probably means that the film is going to be delayed a little, you know, for about a month or so.
What is the reaction in Hollywood to the Harvey Weinstein verdict?
Not surprisingly, everybody is, you know, saying, "Told you so," basically. Some of the tweeters after the verdict was announced yesterday included Mira Sorvino, who is one of the dozens of women who testified against him, saying, "The beginning of justice, more to come, my sisters." Ashley Judd was also one of the people who accused Weinstein of sexual harassment. She wrote to all of the women who walked through this traumatic hell and testified in this case, "You did a public service to girls and women everywhere." And Judd Apatow, the filmmaker, tested, "Don't worry, Harvey Weinstein faces 4 more charges in Los Angeles now. This is just the beginning of holding him accountable. He's got 2 or 3 other charges for allegations that were supposed to have happened in 2013.
Yes, more to come on that story. And also, we talked about this a while back, but I was just reading today about that reunion of Friends. The stars posted on Instagram an old publicity photo, and then the caption was, "It's happening." And I wasn't aware that this is actually going to be on HBO Max.
Right.
This is what we need, another new streaming service.
Right, exactly. This is the HBO's equivalent of what Disney did. You know, Disney's got, well, Disney owns ABC. They've got their own television network, but they've got all their online things, and now they've got this new online platform that you have to pay for if you want to watch certain movies and shows. HBO is starting the same thing. In fact, it's launching really with this Friends reunion, which, as best as I can understand, is not going to be like an episode of Friends, of, you know, where they are now and how they're living now. It's going to be them reminiscing about being on the show, you know, sitting around and talking about being on the show, for which they will be paid $2.5 million a piece. For this one episode.
Wow.
That's Bob Surratt money.
We'll be paying for it when we try to get HBO Max in May. And also, that new streaming service is going to carry, I guess, every episode of Friends. So it'll be your Friends headquarters.
They'll be there for you.
Yes, they will. All right. It's Dean Richards on Entertainment. And watch for that new Channel 9 streaming service. Nothing but Victory Auto Wreckers commercials 24/7.
That would be so great.
That old car is worth money.
Oh, man. I will talk to you tomorrow, Dean.
See ya.
Okay. It's 8:29. And as far as markets are concerned today, looks like it's going to be a little bit better than yesterday. And it wouldn't take much, would it? Let's see. I'll check the numbers here right now for the Dow and NASDAQ. And, well, the Dow is just off not quite 4%. And NASDAQ down also not quite 4%. Terry Savage, financial expert, weighs in with her predictions on what to expect next and where we can invest our money safely. We'll do that. That's coming up right after the news. It's 8:40 right now. For the love of money. Here's Terry Savage, financial expert, syndicated columnist, author of four best-selling books on personal finance. Terry, the Dow is up about 122 points right now, NASDAQ up 67. Happy days are here again, right?
I don't know about that, Bob. And this is, you know me. I like to be Pollyanna about the future of long-term investing, and the history says that, hang in there. But I think this is different, and I really want to issue a warning, not only to those who are near retirement, but even those who are looking at their 401ks, where Fidelity says it's got over 500,000 IRA and 401k millionaires, just from people not being so brilliant, but the market being up for 10 years. This is a little bit different. It's strikes me.
And going forward here now, and hopefully at some point this coronavirus is going to go away, what do you forecast for the market when that happens?
Do you want to bet your retirement on how soon that happens and what happens in the interim? That is the big question right now. And I think this is a time for risk management. I can give you the pluses and I'll give you the minuses.
Okay.
Markets are moved by money, and there's a ton of money floating around the world trying to decide where to go. It didn't just happen overnight the last 10 years. It's happening overnight, actually, in China. They're cutting rates, they're easing, and they're putting more money into the system. Another positive, maybe you're right, there's trials now starting by Gilead of a new vaccine that might be a cure. So if you want to believe in the positive side, there's certainly hope. But in the meantime, you've got not just the financial impacts, the supply chain, the travel, the impact on companies involved in those things, but the emotional impact. I was going to say something like, Europe is all playing football. They're football now. Hundreds of thousands of people crowding into stadiums from England, Italy. I don't think that's going to happen. And I noticed Dave Ennett mentioned that the Michigan Wolverines, my alma mater, aren't going to travel to Europe this year.
Mm-hmm.
Multiply that by a lot, and you've got a lot of economic impact. So this is no time to be putting it all on the line, much less jumping in, I don't think, for bargains.
Is the other big factor this year the presidential election? Because even I know, and I don't know anything about any of this, that the market does not like uncertainty. How much of an effect does that have on things?
Oh, yeah, well, without this, we've had a 10-year bull market, 11 years actually now. We've had peak earnings. We've had the multiples, the hope factor for stocks elevated to very high levels. So forget even the coronavirus. There were a lot of good reasons to wonder about what the market could do going forward. The politics of it, the business cycle of it. This market's been trading on a lot of thin air and a lot of liquidity. So I want to be practical here, and here's my practicality. We're only down 3% from the highs. If you felt like this yesterday, how do you feel when a bear market's down 20%, if that happens? So this is a time where you can now move out of some of the more aggressive stock funds, and there's nothing wrong with riding some of it out in treasury bills, money markets, and so forth. Maybe I'll feel like a fool because the market comes back and roars with all the money up to $35,000, but I don't want to bet my retirement on that. And those of you who are younger, look inside your 401k plan. You've made a lot of money. Is there a little bit more conservative investment choice, dividends funds or equity income funds? I really do think this is the time, not out of panic, but just out of risk management, to adjust.
Well, when everything crashed in 2009, I didn't know what to do. I didn't understand anything, so I didn't do anything. And then it turned out I looked like a genius.
Exactly. And believe me, I was sitting there. I was on your show. I was on TV all the time saying, do not panic in the middle of a panic. Because, remind you, the panic everybody woke up to was when we were down 48%. The Dow fell to 6,700, may I mind you, in March of 2009. And I have the videotapes and columns saying, don't panic now.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, I don't want anybody to panic if it gets really scary and the headlines are down 2,000-3,000 points. So I'd rather see people say, how would I feel? Could I ride it out? Yeah, I'm 29. Are you kidding me? I'm going to ride it out. Fine. I'm 63. I'm going to retire in 4 years. I don't think I want all that exposure. Look at all the money I've made. It's not wrong to be wrong. It's only wrong to stay wrong. So this is a moment where you should look seriously at the impact. If it comes, because there's so many things that are on the horizon here, of how you'd feel if you lost 30, 20, 30, 40% of your money over a period of 6 months. You ride it out, you know.
Right. Terry Savage, I love it when you talk about chicken money. Hang on, and I want to hear about that. And also, if anybody's got a question for Terry, here's our phone number and the text number, by the way, 312-981-7200. Yes, everyone works hard for their money. It's 8:49. We're talking to financial expert Terry Savage. Terry, here's a text from, 224. This is a good question. I'm 22 years old. I have a Roth. I have most of my money in the S&P 500. Should I keep contributing even with this shaky market? Terry? Only press her button so she can speak. There you go. Go ahead, Terry.
There we go. Okay, yeah, that was a great question. Well, here's the thing. I've lived through four bear markets that have taken away nearly 50% of the stock market in my time as a market person. I mean, starting in 73, 74 on the floor of the Chicago Board Options Exchange when it opened. So I know you can live through a bear market. I know that nobody, and I've been around for a long, long time, nobody has a perfect record of timing a bear market. And I know that there's never been a 20-year period where you lost money in a diversified stock portfolio like the S&P 500 with dividends reinvested, even adjusted for inflation. So here's the question you have to ask yourself. Do you have the guts, Mr. 22-year-old, to keep putting in whatever that is in your Roth, whether you're putting in $400 or $500 a month, to make it automatic, to not say, oh, my goodness, I can't put it in today. We're down 1,000 points. I believe absolutely, and history tells me firmly, that if you keep doing that in your Roth, you're going to come out ahead way down the road. The question is, do you have the guts to keep doing it? I hope you do, because I do believe in the future of America. So you need to be able to stick to that plan. I believe you will come out ahead. If I'm wrong, we've got really huge problems. But if it's your father or even your grandfather, who was maybe in his 70s, saying, I've got all my money in the S&P 500 in my Roth, I'm going to say to you, today is a nice day to take half of it out.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm looking at the markets now. Now we're in negative territory. Oh, let me look back. Not in negative territory.
It's up a little bit still, a little bit, the Dow and the NASDAQ. A text from 773, I'll be 60 in July. My 401k is in 2025 targeted retirement accounts. Safe enough? Should I do a little shifting?
Okay, that's another very good question. I think that what's going to happen to the baby boom generation as they retire is they thought they found safety because the managers of the target retirement accounts are professionals, after all. And they have a very heavy weighting towards stocks. And if you're all in a target fund, and they're not, by the way, all weighted the same, some are more aggressive, I would think that inside your 401k, there's probably a stable value fund or something more conservative, a very short-term bond fund, not long-term bonds. And I would suggest that you take 20% out of your target retirement fund that way, and put it in something that's more liquid, more conservative, like stable value, just so you will have the peace of mind to say, at least I did something right and I can stick with it. You're not going to retire for 5 or 6 or 7 years, but let me tell you, in 1973, the Dow was over 1,000. It didn't get over 1,000 again until 1982. It was a decade where the market actually was down or did nothing. Then, of course, it boomed. 82, the market took off on that 20-year bull market. So you could have a 10-year period where the market is down and stays down. You'd like to have some liquidity so you can take those requirement withdrawals or money you need to live in retirement. So close to over 60, I think it's the time to take some of the money off, even if it's in a target retirement fund. Sorry, I went long, but I feel strongly about that.
No, that's good. This is a good time for one of my favorite Terry Savage speeches about chicken money. Talk about this, Terry.
Okay, you know, in the market, they're always talking about the bulls and the bears. I had a third category, the bulls, the bears, and the chickens. And there's nothing to be embarrassed about being a chicken. Everyone should have some chicken money. Chicken money is called money you cannot afford to lose. You don't get rich, and you don't get poor. You can only put it in places that today are disgustingly low interest rates. There's CDs at your bank or at a bank that pays a higher rate. I'll talk about that in a moment. But FDIC-insured CDs no longer than a year. There's money market mutual funds that buy only government securities. There's TreasuryDirect.gov. Go to TerrySavage.com and search the columns for how to buy Treasury bills. $100 minimum, and you're buying the T-bills that the whole world is rushing into. The yields are very low now because everybody's looking for safety. But the mantra of the chicken money investor is, I'm not so concerned about the return on my money as the return of my money. It lets you sleep at night. I said to this person, take 20% out and go into the closest chicken money alternative you have in a 401k. They don't have CDs or money market funds typically. But when you sleep at night, you know, well, at least I have that. I can get through this. You're less likely to panic at the bottom when the market headlines are really scary.
Susie Orman was on CNBC, and she said investors should stay the course. And she explained why she thought investors worried about their retirement savings after the big downturn yesterday should welcome such sell-offs. Do you welcome sell-offs like we had yesterday?
Only if you're continuing to contribute. Your $500 a month will buy more shares. But I understand a little bit about the psychology of investing as well as about the facts. And I know that inevitably what makes market bottoms and panic sell-offs is people who thought they had the discipline to ride it out. So I asked the 22-year-old, you can afford to do this, you know, do it, don't sell. But if you're in your 60s, I think that there's, I will tell you that I personally have a higher level, have had for, in fact, for 7 or 8 months, a higher level of chicken money than at any other time in my life. Now, I may be wrong, but what am I giving up? You know, another however many years of stock market gains after an 11-year bull market versus what aggravation and heart attack am I saving myself on the downside? And how stupid will I look if that money is just sitting there earning 1.25%, 1.5%? Hey, you know, I'm not so concerned about the return on my money now as I am about the return of my money.
Yep, love that line. More at TerrySavage.com. Do you know what you're going to be writing about next for the Syndicated Tribune column, Terry?
Yeah, I think I'm going to update Chicken Money, but if you search my columns for Chicken Money, you'll find that too. And there's another great column, by the way. You have a very sophisticated audience. Let me tell you this quickly. Search in my columns for something called Max My Interest. There's a search bar above my columns at TerrySavage.com. That's a great service that moves your CDs around to the higher yielding online banks. They never take your money. You're all in FDIC insured CDs. If you're really annoyed that your local bank is paying like 0.95 or something like that, you can find 1.5 more, even higher rates on FDIC insured CDs. So maximyinterest.com is the website, and you can read the article at TerrySavage.com.
You're the best, Terry. Thank you so much.
And talk to you soon. Yep. I'm sure I'm going to talk to you soon. These are going to be some wild days ahead.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to talking to you. I don't know about the wild days, but I know you'll clear everything up for us, as only you can.
Thanks,
do.
Bob.
Have a good day. And that about wraps things up for us on this Fat Tuesday. John Williams is here. I don't see you with your box of punchkis, John.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, they're going to appear because this is a radio station.
Oh, they're here.
Oh, they are here.
They're in the kitchen.
Willpower? Do you have any willpower?
You know, punch keys always look really good, but they got so much going on inside them. It's not my first pastry.
Well, it's not mine either, but, you know, when you're here and there's no food and that's
it's
all there is.
It's a wonderful tradition in Chicago. And the half that I ate was my pastry.
You mean like on your power rankings? The pastries?
Exactly. In my pastry power ranking, they're a 4 seed, which, you know, I think will upset the committee because a lot of people really love the punchkis, but for me, they're not number one.
No betting on punchkis.
I'm with you, John.
Are they facing scones in the second round?
Well, the vanilla long john is my Midwest regional number one, so we'll see how it goes.
What is topic number two for you today?
No, I think I could do this for 3 hours. hours, to be honest with you.
You're welcome to try.
Why are the forecasters wrong sometimes this winter? We'll answer that question. And I stayed up till 1 this morning watching Cheer. I power watched the entire docuseries on Netflix last night. My review after the news.
And we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.